Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Rick Lasky, 45 years of combination experience, second generation firefighter. Like a good number of individuals I've been fortunate to interview, being chief was never on Rick's radar. He just wanted to be the best firefighter paramedic for his organization, and Rick could not settle for mediocrity. So he took the advice of a great mentor in his life who told him if he wasn't happy with the way things were, to consider becoming a fire chief to effect change, and that's exactly what he did. I don't need to explain further what this man has been able to do for the fire service, as his work, reputation, and name speaks for itself. With that, I present Mr. Rick Lasky.
Hey, I'm Chief Rick Lasky, and it's an honor to be here with you. Love doing these. Love visiting and chatting about the fire service. Love talking shop. I always explain how, you know, people ask the question how I got into fire service, and I followed in my father's footsteps. I was born and raised on the southwest side of Chicago, and my dad was a firefighter just outside Chicago, like right next door. I was going to fires with him when I was a kid. I couldn't get enough of it. I fell in love with both law enforcement and the fire service when I was little. I ended up being a police and fire explorer at the same time. So I was all kinds of screwed up. I couldn't decide whether I wanted to be a cop or a firefighter. Did all that. When I was 18, instead of taking a scholarship and going playing baseball for free in college, I went and did a little deal with the Chicago White Sox. And after a couple of spring trainings, I realized I need to be in the fire service. So in between that, I went to the, you know, paramedic school, I got my firefighter certifications, and then became a police officer for a little bit while I was doing the fire service thing part-time. And I always joke, I wasn't very good at being a cop because my first year as a cop, I got shot, stabbed, and burned. And my FTO says, Lasky, you suck at being a cop. You need to go be this firefighter. But that's it. It was that. And then just went from there. Volunteering. I was a volunteer firefighter, part-time firefighter, career firefighter at the same time. Teach for the University of Illinois Fire Service Institute at the same time, Illinois Fire Chiefs, teaching paramedic school, a couple different hospitals where I was at. So I was busy, 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 plus still playing ball. I've always been a football player and baseball, but played softball, major level softball for a long time. I was honored. Got inducted in the Softball Hall of Fame a while back, got to watch my daughter play, in the state championship 5A and win it. As a catcher. And but that's it. That's how I got into the fire service. A lot more to talk about with that, but worked my way all the way up through the ranks, and 45 years in a fire service, and I'm not going nowhere. I love what I'm doing. Still helping with volunteering and wherever I can between my travels and consulting and that.
Okay. So one of my questions to you is, are you a second generation firefighter? Because you're following your father's footsteps.
Yeah, second generation firefighter. And I'd hoped that either my son or daughter, my daughter wanted to be an FBI agent. She ended up graduating. She went to work for Lockheed Martin. She and my son both worked for Lockheed Martin over the F-35 fighter jet. My son went right out of college into the Navy as an FMF, a Fleet Marine Force Corpsman. Please, if you're a corpsman out there, don't get mad at me because I teach for the Navy a lot of times. You don't ever refer to a corpsman as a combat medic because they get upset. They're FMF corpsmen, the docs. My son was assigned as Marines in Afghanistan. So, quote unquote, he was their combat medic, and served probably for 6 years. Very well decorated, ended up getting hurt, but he's doing great things. And he's doing very well working for Lockheed Martin, like I said, with my daughter. So, but yeah, I was kind of hoping, but it didn't happen. I'm fine. I'm very proud of where they're both at. So yeah, okay. I'm the second one.
Okay. Coming into the fire service, you know, you mentioned part-time volunteer career. At what point did you decide like you wanted to do this career-wise?
Well, to be honest, I wanted to be a career firefighter from as far back as I remember. When I was a kid, I used to love hanging at my dad's firehouse, you know. I can remember almost every career guy that was there. I can remember their names, their ranks. I was able, when my dad was, you know, going back for calls, I was able to go with him. So I always wanted to do that. And then, if I could share with you, I actually had Danny, I had a police officer intervene in my life and actually save me, if you will. I actually talk about this in a program I do for high schoolers and middle schoolers called Building Tomorrow's Leaders and Successors. But I had a younger brother when he was 8 years old. I was 12, diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. He'd be alive today with medical science, but they gave him 3 months and he lived for 18. And we're living in the same house in Chicago, same bedroom. He woke up having a nightmare and didn't know he was sick, thought I needed glasses. And he says, "Ricky, they want to put me in a wooden box. Please let me in the coffin." And I'm like, I'm 12. There was no counseling for kids back then. You know what I'm saying? I panicked and instead of staying home with him every second I could, which has haunted me since then, I know he's forgiven me. I just haven't got to that point I can forgive myself. I started hanging out with firefighters' kids, so my dad's firefighters are older than me, and we got in trouble. We did some pretty serious stuff, very serious stuff. And a dispatcher told a rookie police officer that I don't think he's a bad kid. He just needs someone strong in his life. My parents were split, and I remember him taking the handcuffs off me to tell you how serious it was in the police station. And he turns around and goes, "The only way I'm gonna keep you, Lasky, from going to jail is by making you a police cadet." And I go, "I don't think you understand. I'm not gonna be a cop. I'm gonna be a firefighter." He goes, "No, I don't think you understand. You know, we got this new program through the Boy Scouts that's called the Explorers. We're starting Monday night at 6 o'clock. I need your uniform sizes. You're gonna do." I go, "I don't think you understand. I am not gonna be a cop." He yells at me. He goes, "I don't think you understand. If you don't do this, you're going to the Audi home, which is like Cook County Jail for like little kids." I'm like, "Okay, I'll see you at 6 o'clock Monday night." And all kidding aside, I never got in trouble again. I mean, I got like a fight in high school, but nothing. And I never got to thank him. I always tell people, thank your mentors and those that made a difference in your life. I never got to thank him. But if that guy had intervened, and I always tell people, Danny, I'm like, you know, you ne never sell yourself short on the impact you have on people's lives, even if it's just a ricochet glancing moment. You know, this guy bumped into my life for a very brief amount of time, and here we are today. So, it got me wanting to be a police officer then, and I ended up doing that. Then I was, you know, I told you I struggled. I wanted to be Jim Reed from Adam 12 or Johnny Gage from Emergency. I couldn't decide in those two. And my dad really wanted to be a firefighter. When I was a police officer, I was getting ready to be promoted to sergeant, and I had to make a decision. And I moved over to being a career firefighter, paramedic. You know, I was still doing the volunteer and part-time thing, but that kind of pushed me that way. So I'd always wanted to be a career firefighter.
And what department was your father on?
The apartment just outside Chicago, called LaGrange. LaGrange has been there, God, forever since the 1800s. And you know, I can remember. I mean, I remember everything about the firehouse. I remember the smells and the sounds and everything. And I always tell people, I wrote about pride and ownership. You know, when I could hear the tones go off. Or when they blow the siren, I was real little. I would run down out the door in the middle of the night and get in the backseat of his car under his bunker coat, only to scare the crap out of him when we got there because he didn't know I was there. You know, he's like, "Oh, you shouldn't have got you to leave me with the driver. You know, what are you, Ricky? What are you doing?" And no, I knew early on I wanted to be a career firefighter. And but LaGrange is still a great fire department, great firefighters there, a lot of history, great place. I went to high school there and everything else.
Okay. And so what career department did you work with?
My first career department was Bedford Park. Bedford Park is surrounded on a couple sides by Chicago. Firehouse I was at the time was about a block from Midway Airport. Great experiences, great department, still an incredible fire department. Got me into hazmat. I was a big hazmat geek for a long time. A lot of great experiences there. After a while, there wasn't a whole lot going on there promotional wise, and I got offered a battalion chief of training and safety at a neighboring department, multiple stations. I took that position up as assistant chief and then got offered the job as fire chief in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, North Idaho. And we'd still be in North Idaho today if it wasn't for my first wife moving my second, my practice wife. I shouldn't say that too loud, but if she had moved to Texas, South Lake, Texas, with my son when he was little. We'd still be in Coeur d'Alene is a fascinating place. And they got a great fire chief now, Tommy Greif. Kenny Gabriel was before then. Kenny's my good friend. But yeah, and then while we were there and loving it, got approached by a headhunter to interview for the chief's job in Louisville, Texas. Los was about 10 minutes north of Dallas, and currently they're eight station apartment, big department, run a lot of fires, a lot of stuff. Great, 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 great firefighters there. It's truly blessed to be there for just under 12 years. And I told him I'd give him 10. I gave him almost 12. And then me and my buddy John Salka from the Bronx had a dream to get even more involved with the line of duty, that stuff we were doing with the lecturing, for me, the consulting and labor management and just fixing the things. So we made a decision to move into that on a more full-time basis while we volunteered. So,
Okay.
yeah.
So this next question, it's a newer question. Actually, it is a new question, but I'm going to start asking all the guests that come on. Whether you're a career or volunteer, what is your definition of professionalism?
Well, it doesn't matter, career or volunteer, we're both professionals. Somebody asked me that not too long ago. They said, "Well, how do you deal with the volunteer firefighters versus the professional firefighters?" And I said, "Well, let me just correct you, ma'am." I said to this nice lady, I said, "Career or volunteer, we're both professional." My good friend Tom Merrill wrote a book called "A Professional Volunteer Firefighter, Professional Volunteer Fire Department." It is what you make of it. There's just under 40,000 fire departments in the United States. I think like 66% are still volunteer. I've seen some incredible career departments. I'm a big advocate of unions, of labor, but I'm also a big advocate of volunteerism. I've seen volunteer fire departments that would outperform the majority of the career departments I know. I've seen some career departments that are fabulous. Louisville's one, Stockton, California, Wichita, Kansas. There's some right next to me here in the Metroplex that are phenomenal. Like I mentioned, Louisville, where they get after it, very aggressive, very safe, aggressive fire departments. But that being said, there's good and bad on both sides. I've been to some career departments that, to be honest, could put a fire out in a top hat. And I've been to some that are phenomenal. And the same thing on the volunteer side. And without running on that rabbit hole, it all comes down to leadership. It all comes down to who's running the show. If leadership and parenting are kind of the same thing, if you see a bunch of kids acting like jackasses, you don't blame the kids. You just look at the parents. If you see a bunch of firefighters acting a fool or not doing their job right, they're not performing well, it's the leadership. Their company officers aren't training them. The leadership isn't there for them. I've never blamed firefighters for anything going wrong. It's always the bosses that allow that stuff to happen. And if you don't fix things, if you don't take care of things, he's probably my absolute idol of my life and mentor is a guy named Colin Powell. And I'm sad he's gone now. We got to meet him like three times, a visit with him. He one of his tenets, one of his points with the Powell Leadership Doctrine is never walk past a mistake. And all too often, we just rather be buddies than bosses. We kind of, we walk by something, and when you start getting promoted, it's not about making friends with everybody. It's not about making everybody. If you want to make everybody happy, go sell ice cream. It's about leading and keeping your people alive and keeping them safe and being worried about them and their families more than yourself and doing everything you can for them. Well, when you see leaders place their agendas above their people, when leaders start to believe their own newspaper clippings, when the fire chiefs and the company officers start to think it's all about them, I've got a friend of mine that's a Navy Cross recipient, and he said when he received that medal, he had a general tell him, it was right after that, he says, "You can either wear that medal or it can wear you." And it's the same thing with the trumpets for those who are promoted. You can either wear them or they can wear you. So, that being said, we can both be professional. It's up to the individual. It's up to how much you love the job, how much you're into it. And I real quick, I'm way too competitive in my life to be second best. I'm way too competitive to look like I don't know what I'm doing. I'm way too competitive to have a fire department that doesn't know what they're doing out of the call because they don't train. You can see that. All you have to do is watch perform. You can tell if they train or not. I want to be part of the best, or I don't want to be. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if I can't be part of
Absolutely.
the best, then I don't want to do it. I want to be in a fire department and be around people who love the job, that are into it. You don't have to love it like me, but so yeah, I think they could both. We're both professionals. Here, very simply put, one gets paid and one doesn't. Fire doesn't care. Fire will kill your ass dead. There's one memorial in Emmitsburg, not two. Fire doesn't burn people differently. Cars don't hit people differently or whatever. We're both professionals. If you want to be, you can't be. So.
Love it. Love it. Okay. With that being said, as you were growing up within the fire service, what, and only answer if you want to, but what occurred in your career that made you like so passionate when it comes to leadership and how a leader should be for the rest of their organization?
I've got an answer for that. Is the only reason I didn't want to become a fire chief. In fact, if I tell people all the time, if you think I make fun of fire chiefs now, you should have met me when I was the assistant fire chief, because I really make fun of fire chiefs. But one of my mentors, Chief Tom Freeman, who I love dearly, good mentors will stomp on you when they need to, and without worrying about hurting your feelings, because they want to make a difference in your life. And he stomped on me several times. Thank God he did. And he said, he just one day he walked, he goes, "Rick, if you're tired of all the mutt fire chiefs, why don't you go be a good one? Stop your bitching and go out there and make a difference." And it applies to more than just that. I got tired of working for bosses that sucked. I got tired of working for chiefs that were you had to chase around the golf course instead of, when I'm chiefing it, I'm in the firehouses. I'm having coffee with the guys and gals. I make calls. I don't have to take command of everything. In Louisville, the guys used to ask why I was in command all the time. That's because the battalion chiefs wanted to do operations. They wanted to go run the fire. They wanted to go up. I had to sit in the car with a Crayola set and draw pictures with an aide while they got to go up and have all the fun. But that being said, I just, that was one of the things I even told someone in an interview, actually Louisville, one of my bosses said, "What kind of fire chief do you like working for?" And I explained. And she said, "What kind of fire chief do you not like working for?" And I said, "The one I just got done working for a little while ago." I go, "In fact, if I ever get to work like that, if I ever get to be like him, run me over with your car. I'll actually sign a contract says I won't prosecute, I won't charge. Just if I get to be the kind of chief I hated working for, put me out of my misery." So getting into the leadership side of thing and being as passionate about making a difference in our company officer academies, our chief officer academies, all of our leadership programs, we have a bunch of them, is to try and create more people, not like Rick Lasky, but more people like my mentors, the legends in the fire service. If you want to be a great chief, there's a laundry list of great fire chiefs out there. If you want, we did a podcast once, that great company officer, be more like Tim. And because people come up to any class and say, "I'm getting ready to get promoted lieutenant. I've never been an officer before. What advice do you have for me?" And I just finally, after I got through describing, I said, "Be more like Lieutenant Tim Klett from the FDNY, from 88 Engine. Be more like Tim. There's plenty of examples out there on how to be a great boss, and it's not as difficult as people make it out to be." But that's basically it. I got tired of working for bad bosses. So I'm like, he's like, "Go out. We're not going to make a difference unless we make a difference. You can sit back and bitch at the kitchen table all you want, but if you're not going to go out and have a hand and make a difference, then stop your complaining," right?
Okay. And I don't want to say is it easy because it's not, but and this is a question I hear a lot, and I discuss this with other firefighters, other chief officers. How do you take an organization that is okay with being mediocre, where complacency has made a home and a bed in it, and try to affect change?
Number one, complacency is a fancy word for laziness. It comes back to setting expectations. You'll get a lot of fire chiefs that go and they just try to get along. They have a hard time having that tough conversation with people. They can't make the difficult decisions and all that stuff. I remember when I got to Louisville, like I said, great capital letters, great fire department. But when I got there, I was a truckie. I was a roofer like my dad, a truck guy. And they were like, "Well, you don't think we're good truck guys. We don't think I go, I go, "No, you guys are very good at truck work. Don't you want to be great? Because I can't settle for mediocre okay. I can't settle for just okay." It's like that remember that, Danny, remember that AT&T commercial, the guy's in the hospital bed and
Yes, and
wife
the
and two kids
doctor.
there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the nurse is taking his blood pressure, remember? And the wife says to the nurse, she goes, "So how is Dr. Jones?" And the nurse goes, "Oh, he's okay." And the guy sits up and goes, "Just okay?" And the doctor walks in and says, "You hear me in the hallway, guess who just got reinstated?" And he comes in, he goes, "You nervous?" "Yeah, me too. Don't worry about it. We'll figure out when we get in there." See you in there. I can't be part of mediocre. I can't be with just okay. So I think it comes down to setting expectations, sitting back and watching your people. If you don't make calls as a leader, as a fire chief, you can't tell. Anybody can apple polish, anybody can look good in a training field. When you go to an incident, you see how they're set up, apparatus placement, their gear, their tools, how they're performing, how quick they're deploying, hose lines and everything that goes along with it, you can get a pretty good read pretty quick. And then you sit down and go, "Guys, we're doing good, but I don't know. I want to be better. I want to be better. I don't want you guys to be crazy nutjob maniacs." Well, actually, I want you to be crazy nutjob maniacs. I want you, we talk about it. I think Wichita, Kansas, have, I don't know if it's a written rule or an unwritten rule. When you set the moment you set the parking brake, their goal is to be in the building on air, flowing water in under a minute. Stockton, California, same thing. Watch Stockton and watch Wichita on the videos. Now, Stockton, California prides themselves on not running on the fire ground. What they do is they work at a rapid pace. You watch them, watch my buddies in Detroit. There's no lollygagging. There's no like they're at someone's picnic. Someone's house is on fire. They work quickly. They train over and over. Stockton and Wichita, they stretch hose, they stretch hose, they stretch hose, they stretch hose. They train all the time. One engine doesn't want the other engine to beat them into the fire, into the building. And it's not about stupid, crazy competitions. It's about, you know what? We're in engine force house. I want to be the best. What guys, and that's what I've done. I've appealed to guys saying, "So what do we have to do to be the best?" And lay it at their feet. Throw your expectations out there. Complacency, a good killer of that is have the guys start doing line of duty that book reports. What happened in Hackensack, great fire department, but here's the lessons from 25 years ago. What happened, or whatever, what happened in Worcester? What happened here? What happened there? Pretty soon they start to realize that what happened over in Beeperville can happen where they're at, and they want to fine tune. I was never one, at the fire ground, I would go, "Oh, what are you doing?" I've never yelled at firefighters. I have captains that get on firefighters. I don't have to meddle their business, but I was known to say things like, "We're better than this." I'd watch something go, "We are so much better than this." And I think that has more of an impact. Danny, nobody wears a company logo shirt that says, "We suck less than them." Everybody wants, they've got the tattoos and the hats and the t-shirts and all that stuff. But they're more than just those things. You've got to truly be that great firefighter, that great paramedic, that great educator, if you will, for kids and impacting your neighborhood. So all comes down to setting expectations and following through.
Okay. With what you just said, I have another question for you.
Okay.
As a leader of the organization, whether it's a battalion chief or higher, why do those officers let either individuals or crews that they know are mediocre stay that way and not do anything about it while the rest of the department knows and watches?
Well, there's a lot of catchy phrases out there that, nothing kills an organization's morale better than watching people that don't do it right or do it wrong continue to do that, and nobody steps up and makes that change. I think a lot of it has to do, we're the only profession, Danny, out there that doesn't prepare people for the next role in most places. There are some departments that are lucky. New FDNY, you get promoted to lieutenant in the fire department of New York City. I think it's still, you go away to school for 6 weeks. Captain, I think four. I got screwed. I got thrown to the wolves. I mean, we do our company officer cab because of that. I always ask that question in the class. How many people are lieutenant higher? They all raise their hands. Okay. So what do you remember from the class they sent you to on how to be a company officer before they ever let you ride the front seat? And they all go like this or whatever. And I go, "Well, wait a minute. So we hired you as a firefighter. We put you through firefighter one, firefighter two, whatever you call it in your state, EMT, maybe even paramedic, hazmat awareness, first responder, maybe tech rescue awareness. we get you on shift, we do training as CE or at your volunteer, you do your training night. And then 2 years later, you're driving, and then we promote you to lieutenant or captain, and we don't further your training. And I say, what's even scarier than that is put chief in a title, battalion, district, deputy, assistant, division, chief of department. And men and women, great men and women that are running the joint, receive the least amount of training. They go, well, I went to National Fire Academy. I understand that. But for a battalion chief, that's why we do our battalion chief's academy. I ask people, so when's the next battalion chief's academy going on in your region? Now, there's different states. Texas runs one. There's other places that do that. But you can count on his hand how many probably do a really good job at. So we're
Right.
the only profession that continue. We front load you with all this information, and then we give you nothing. We expect you to learn on the job or figure it out for yourself. Then I get to go in as a consultant, as a mediator, and fix stuff because guys don't know. So part of that is they don't know what to say, how to do it, how to lead. Some come in and think, well, my dad used to yell at me, so I guess I got to yell at them. Or I worked for a lieutenant that used to yell at me, or I worked for a bully, or I worked for someone, or I worked for a guy that, that he was more of a goof and a buddy than he was a boss, that kind of stuff. So I think you see a lot of that, and that just allows these organizations, these companies, to further themselves into number 13 out of one to 14. You know what I'm saying? Everybody wants to be one, but they're one away from being the worst. Until somebody's going to step up, make that adjustment from buddy to boss, sit down with their troops and go, how we, it's going to continue. And again, a lot of people aren't sure. I have so many people, Danny asked me, so this is my situation. What would you do? What would you? And I'm like, well, this is what I would do if I had that crew. I would get them together and, blah, 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 so forth. But when we don't prepare people for the next level, when we don't prepare people, for the next position, we only have us to blame. Don't blame the firefighters, man. Don't ever blame, don't blame any firefighter. It's always the company officer's fault. And then you go to the chiefs that are above them. My buddy John Salka, we just posted yesterday. There's a department in New York that posts one of his many sayings, and one is, you're not up in the cab to beep just to beep the horn. And that's true. Some guys think, well, I'm up there now, beep, beep. You watch them, and I'm like, fighting a fight, go to a job, which we all like doing, fighting fires is a bullet point to the job description. That's a task. Everything we do is a reflection of how we operate, how we lead in our firehouse. So those that don't have the tools in order to change a culture in a firehouse are going to allow it to go further. So back to the leadership. What are you doing to develop the leadership within your department so you don't have those situations? A lot of people, well, we got a bunch of mud firefighters. No, I beg to differ with you. You probably have a bunch of, again, look at the kids. Look at those kids, all those kids. Well, then look at the parents. It's the same thing. You look at who's running the show. If you have one problem firefighter, I understand that. But when you have a whole firehouse, or really, you're gonna, they're right. No, it's the boss's fault. So someone has to step in and change that culture. But we've got to provide them with the tools in order to do that.
Yes, sir. Okay. And kind of go along with that same question. In your opinion, why do you think certain organizations allow these individuals that you're talking about, and we all know them, that really aren't engaged, haven't really been engaged, are okay with being subpar? Why do we allow them? Why do we allow to promote them to company officer roles?
Well, part of that's the system. We've tried to establish. I've helped a lot of departments with their promotional processes. I've said before, in the absence of a good hiring background and promotional process, you'll have problems. People do not become problems after you hired them. You missed it. You missed it. They snuck it in the door. But in the absence of a good promotional process, you're going to have some issues. Now, regardless of how you promote people, it comes back to what we're doing before that to give them, the power they need to be able to do their job, the education, the experience to do their job. I think a lot of departments have to look at their processes. I do that. I'll go in somewhere. I'll give an example. You have to look at your promotional process to make sure it's fair, attainable, and objective for everybody. I look at the same way I look at performance evaluations. The departments that do them, the majority do them all wrong because nobody's ever shown them or explained to them how to do them. You sit down, you go, well, these core competencies, these three out of these nine, I can't even find in a job description, which I should be able to find every one of the things you're evaluating in this job description. And no wonder. I mean, it's the same thing when you look at promotional process. Some departments, it's just a written test and we see who scores the highest. So we're hiring, we're promoting people on a written exam. I've never liked that because I've liked to balance. You need to pass a written, you need to pass some in baskets that HR set up or an outside company. You have to pass a tactical assessment, maybe, certain scenarios, things like that, and then average the scores, just like you would, like they do with firefighter exams. If you take a firefighter exam where there's multiple parts, that's what they're doing. They're averaging the scores from all those parts to add up to see if you get a 70.0 or an 80 in some places. If you're just solely doing it on seniority, or you're solely doing it on just a written exam, there's a lot of good test takers out there that can't lead. Anyone can lead, but not everybody can be the leader. There's so that being said, if your process has some chinks in the armor, if you're not, we do something called positional line of sight mentoring, where everybody's trained in the next position. Every firefighter that's on probation is trained to be a driver. Every driver is trained to be a company officer. Every company officer is trained to be a battalion chief, and so on and so forth. Now, we may not ever use old Ricky Boy as a battalion chief, but you're going to get the training. Everybody. So we're training them for the next position as well as what they're doing with the current one. A little bit more understanding. A little bit when guys start acting out of class as an officer, I love asking that question. So do you have an acting position for lieutenant or captain? Yeah. What does it take to do that? Well, there's this. Okay, so if I take your exam, your promotional process for lieutenant, and I fail, I don't score a 70.0. Am I still allowed to act up when someone's off? There's been a lot of lawsuits where people have ridden the front seat that failed the entire process, didn't even make the list, and then got someone hurt. So as much as some people don't want to hear that, you've got to look at the whole process and see where the chinks are in the armor. Maybe your written's good. I've been to places, Danny, where the stuff they're making people read are no longer pertinent, or they're outdated, or their SOGs have been updated, or whatever. Everybody needs fair and objectivity when it comes to the references. Everybody needs access to the reading materials to be able to study, the workshop, the sessions, everything. There should be a process to help people get there. If you're just hoping people sign up and submit a piece of paper for the promotional exam, you don't do anything for them ahead of time. Well, you're hoping you get someone. That's like the guys out there that write great resumes for fire chief. I've seen some of the best resumes. Oh my God, they're incredible. You get an interview and they're horrible. They're horrible. Anybody could put on a show or apple polish, but so I think you've got to look at the process you have and make sure it's balanced. Make sure somebody's got the education, whatever you look for educational wise, or the cognitive skills when it comes to being able to pass a written exam and pass the books or what you're referencing. Are you Firefighter Safety Survival, John Edwards Fire Officer Handbook of Tactics, all those different books, if that's on your reading list, why are those on there, and are they digesting that? Then in the tactical assessment, you don't necessarily have to be like trying to trip them up and fire, screw them up. Can they talk their way through a fire, through riding the front seat as a company officer? The in baskets, your personnel problems or station situation should be stuff. If it's a company officer, they should be things that are going on in your firehouse. Firefighter shows up late repetitively, or you have a harassment situation, or a dependency problem on drugs or alcohol or whatever. If it's a battalion chief, that needs to be more global, more shift wise as a company or station. So those different things have to be, and you have to average those and really see if everybody's hitting. I'll ask you this. So you're going to go to a doctor with one of your kids, and they're not feeling good. You don't know what's wrong, and you show up, and the doctor is a ear, nose, and throat doctor, but nothing else. Well, okay, that's great, but what if my kid's problem has nothing to do with ear, nose, and throat? You know what I'm saying? I want a doctor that GP that can look at everything. If I need to go to a specialist for my heart or lungs, I'll go to that. But so my question is, who do you want riding the front seat? Do you want someone that's has had a balanced career and a balanced knowledge base, cognitive and psychomotor, hands-on and written stuff? Or do you want someone that could take a really good test, but they can't run the fire ground?
Right.
And sadly, as much as some guys don't want to hear it, I've seen some really horrible things going out there. And it went back and went, well, here's the problem, So I think you've got to look at your system and really look at it and make sure it's fair to all involved, fair and attainable and objective. And then what, if you do that, you'll be able to identify if you're providing a process for them in order to be successful, you can't, I was just saying, you can't hope that people are going to do it all on their own. Good
Right.
organizations prepare their people. They prepare their people for the next level,
Yes, sir. Okay. All right. With that being said, your personal opinion, what does the term aggressive, and it's a buzzword, it's used a lot, but what does it mean to you when it pertains to the fire service?
Well, it's kind of ironic you asked that question. I wrote an article several years ago. It ended up in Fire Rescue. Fire Rescue is owned by Clarion. It's fire engineering, fire rescue, GEMS, FDIC, all that stuff's together. Fire Apparatus, another great magazine, fire equipment. Anyway, I wrote an article, Are We Too Aggressive or Just Using the Wrong Word? Okay. And backed that up by another article that said the most dangerous words in the fire service. So two things happen. One is you hear people say the most dangerous words in the fire service are because we've always done it this way. We've always done it this way. And that's one of the ones where even with some of my friends, we're going to agree to disagree because I don't agree with that. There are some things we've done for 100 years, how we stretch hose a certain way, how we do things that how we do a right-handed search. We've done for a long way, a long time. The word we should be, when we talk about the phrase we should be more concerned with is we never thought it would happen here. Whether it's doing an investigation, running a funeral, or just showing up somewhere, I can't tell how many people have said, Chief, we never thought it would happen here. We never,
Right.
we've never had an emergency, and we haven't, but we never thought it would happen here. Though, you drop your guard one time, you're just as dead, and we don't get do-overs. The word aggressive. So backing it up to that other blog slash article, I said, are we too aggressive just using the wrong word? Because every time someone gets hurt, you see it all the time. You see the keyboard, you see these guys, the keyboard commanders get on there. I just saw a video of a crew ventilating, and oh my God, where they get up first, they get off the roof. He just cut the damn hole. Give them a chance to get off the roof. I mean, excuse me. Remind me, we'll get to the whole data, not drama thing in a second here.
Okay.
We're gonna talk about that, but the aggressiveness. So my point was, you go see, we're too aggressive. That firefighter from Booperville, see, the fire service is way too aggressive. And I'm like, no. I think, and I said this, I thank God every day. It was the most read article that year. I thank God every day that we are aggressive. I thank God every day, Danny, that you're aggressive enough to get into that building and go after that little kid on the second floor, or that grandma, or go after a fellow firefighter, or move away from the fire ground, aggressive enough to cut somebody out of their car while they're pinned, or aggressive enough on a CPR of somebody or a baby or an infant or a drowning or whatever. I thank God we're aggressive. We have been successful in the fire service because we attack our things with a coordinated aggressiveness. The word we need to become that we need to be concerned with, all right, is not as much aggressive, all right, because thank God we're doing that. All right. There's another phrase, there's another word we need to be concerned with. And that is looking at a video, all right? Looking at a video and watching guys do something, all right? The first thing you watch, you go, where was the company officer? Why are they on that roof now? Why are they, you know what I'm saying? So what happens is we get hung up on the word aggressive instead of thinking about, the impact of what's going on. All right. So I've seen over my career tons of people who are aggressive who are successful. All right. With a coordinated aggressive, with a line, ventilation, search, all the different things we've done. All right. I've seen a lot of people mess up. All right. By being complacent. All right. I've seen a lot of people mess up, by not paying attention to what's going on with their crews. So I don't have a problem with the word aggressive. I have no problem with us being, in fact, could you imagine a non-aggressive Marine Corps? Hey, Gunny, do you really think we should charge that hill? They may shoot a real bullet at us. There are people out there Danny, that are counting on us to come to them when their houses are on fire, when their families are trapped. They spend a lot of money on fire apparatus, on gear, protective clothing, SCBAs, everything we need to be able to get in there. And our job is to respond and search searchable areas. Our good friend David Rhodes, Chief Rhodes from Fire Engineering, FDIC, on one of our shows said it before. The only reason we respond to fires, the only reason we stretch hose, the only reason we ventilate is to search. Searchable spaces. That's our job, is to search. So that being said, are we being too aggressive, like I said, or just using the wrong words to describe that? And that's always been my thing. There, that one word people get hung up on, and like I said, you see all that, they're way too aggressive. I'm like, well, I thank God my guys are just aggressive. All right.
Right.
But I don't like the word stupid. I don't like the words dumb. But how about we be smart at what we're doing? Where was the company officer for that? Why are they on that roof now? Why are they doing that? Why are they walking out in the middle of the highway now? Why is nobody paying attention? Why do they not set the apparatus right? Why do they not have a backer? Why did they? Why did they? Why did they? Are all the reasons, that we should be paying attention to what our people are doing?
Right.
I mean, what? I don't know how we still back over firefighters in this country. The construction crews have always had a way of protecting their people the best way they can. We're always, because of manpower, asses and elbows at an accident. We don't have a lookout. We're not, it's hard. We can't even get blocker wrenches and stuff like that. So that being said, yeah, I have no problem with the word aggressive. There's other words that we should be more concerned with than that word aggressive. Because, seriously, the only time, like I said, is when we're neglectful, when we're watching our people. Again, we need to quit blaming everything on being too aggressive. We need to be looking back at why we're allowing things to happen in the first place, instead of throwing a word at everything that we don't like.
Understood. Okay. Now you did mention the data, not drama portion. So what's your take on that?
Our good friend Bill Carey used to manage Firefighter Nation for us. Bill's got actually a website, Data Not Drama. And that's how I live my life. Our friend Don Abbott, that passed away a little while back, did a program called Project Mayday. And at the time when he passed, he had researched over 12,000 Maydays. So when somebody comes up and says, "Yeah, we changed channels during a Mayday," I go, "Well, that's not good. It doesn't work. It works in training. It works in your SOG, but it doesn't work. And we have the Maydays to back it up." Why Lunar is not the best acronym, who, what, where is better, all that stuff. I like having the data. I tell people, don't give me your theory, don't give me your feelings, your shirt sleeve, heart on a shirt sleeve thing. I'd like to back it up with what's realistic. So Data Not Drama, if you go to his website, there's an article, like I think it's called Grasping at Pearls or whatever. But we'll be somewhere doing a class, and we'll be doing tactics and strategy. And so I say, "Well, we're not allowed to ventilate vertical roofs because our chief says vertical ventilation is way too dangerous, way too dangerous." And firefighters get killed doing it. And Bill's always said it. We say, "Is where's that data from?" And he actually has the data. The guy, his data, his statistics are phenomenal regarding injuries and line of duty. So it's the same thing. We're not allowed to search above the fire floor without protection of the hand line because our chief said it's too dangerous. And he's like, "Again, where'd you get that information?" If you go to his site, he's got the data, and you go, "Oh, now we're not saying, I believe in firefighter safety more than most people in risk management." But don't make up your own truths. You don't make your own ending to a story, because it fits your thing you're working on, your position you're trying to prove. I'm like, "Oh, show me the money, man. Show me the data. I want to see where the data is," instead of just someone's theory. So the data, not drama. I love that when it comes to firefighter rescue, when it comes to Maydays, when it comes to injuries and line of duty. That's, I like it when it comes to our tactics and strategy. It's there's so many things that I see when I go do consulting work where I'm like, "Well, no, that's not actually right," or that has changed. What's amazing to me, my buddy John Salka says it all the time. When you say how many people died on 9/11, and I lost a bunch of friends that day, they'll go 343. Well, 343 firefighters from the FDNY. 344 if you count Roma, the IAF firefighter from the New York Fire Patrol number 2, we forget about. There was a handful of EMTs and paramedics, 29 NYPD, 39 Port Authority, I think. There was 3,000 people that died that day. And then he always asked the question, how many people die in the United States every year due to fire? One day we lost horrible, horrible, horrific, horrible day, 9/11. We lost 3,000 people. How many people die every year due to fire? And on average, it's 3,000. Actually, it's more. I think the past 30 years, if you look at the U.S. Fire Administration's data, I think three times it dipped to like 25, 26, 28. Last year, I think it was almost 4,000, that die due to fire every year. And no disrespect, I'm very partial to my law enforcement family. I love them. It's my wife, everybody else, but they get billions and billions and billions of dollars every year. God bless them. And we get like what for just under 40,000 fire departments. Right now, well, the AFG grants where there's 400 and something million dollars, there's almost 40,000 fire departments. Where's our money? We talk cancer awareness and two sets of all this different stuff, but are we really, who's fighting for us to get us our funding? Instead of all the fancy, all this other stuff, who's fighting for us? So I think the data, not drama, and I'll end it with this. I went to help a fire chief. They brought me in to help this fire chief justify he wanted to build two more firehouses. And my flight was delayed. I got to the council meeting, city council meeting, right when he was at the podium. And there was this council member that goes, I got a paper. He goes, so chief, the data I have in front of me says that fires are down in the United States, the number of fires. Now you're asking for more people, more stations, more apparatus at a cost of this. But if the data is telling me that fires are down, shouldn't we actually look at reducing the number of fire? I'm like, oh my God. And this guy, I want to club him. I want to club him with a Halligan, man. I'm telling you. His reply, Danny, to this guy was, well, Councilmember, you got to understand, we're the insurance policy that you never want to use. And I'm like, oh my God, really? And later on, he goes, well, what should I say? He said, well, Councilman, I understand what you're saying. And yeah, you know what? Most of the data you're looking at is accurate. Fires, if you look at the number of fires, are down. But Councilman, do you know it's at an all-time high in the United States of America? And there's a pause. Dollars lost to fire. Dollars lost to fire. So maybe the numbers are down, but the dollars lost to fire, isn't it what we should be concerned with? Is the dollars lost to fire and lives. We have over three, between 3,000 and 4,000 people almost every year. What are we doing for that? And we're talking, anyway, we don't use the data tonight the right way a lot of times. We don't come with the right fight. We like to use buzzwords, and there you go,
Now, I like to call it, especially when like you bring up the fire tactic side, like searching without a handline. Okay, that's you'll hear some chief officers, that's dangerous. But I call it like fear mongering because it's not dangerous, but I truly believe, in my opinion, it's because whatever chief officer's making that decision has really never been the firefighter in that position. And so there, and I've said this to other chiefs that I've interviewed, no fire chief wants to ever have a line of duty death, and I understand that. But you can only safety what we do on the fire ground so much. You have to let firemen get after it through training, through repetitive motions of going through, of stretching hose, throwing ladders, searching. That's the only way we get good at it. And I feel like when they're holding us back when they're like, well, in order to search, you have to search with a handline. And it's like, well, they don't understand the how taxing that is on a firefighter's body.
Not gonna get much done.
Exactly. So, I mean, what are your takes on chiefs that, well, nope, this is how it's going to be. And I think it's because they just don't know.
Well, I'll go back to, like I said, the word aggressive or aggressiveness isn't a word we should be concerned with. The actual word, if you think about it, we should be concerned with is reckless. We're not aggressive. When we become reckless, when we don't have a back, we're not wearing our seatbelts, excessive speed, someone's on the wrong roof, someone's in the wrong place. Now it brings us to your question. I've been there. There's a lot of chiefs. Thank God the majority of the fire chiefs never had to work their way through a mayday. One of the most horrific, god-awful things. There's times you go to funerals as a boss and you go, God, I hope this never hit. You sit there. There's always that when you're outside and things aren't going right and smoke conditions get worse and you're not hearing nothing from the guys. I mean, so I think a lot of them become a little bit more, let's back away a little bit. Because it's like when you have a kid. When you were a young guy or gal, you were a crazy nut job jumping off of decks of the backyard, jumping, climbing trees, doing all kinds of stuff. And then you have a kid, you're like, oh no, don't do that, don't do that. All of a sudden now that protection thing comes in. Everything takes kind of a different turn where you're a lot more worried. But so like not to get down on two in, two out too much, but there's a great article for your viewers, your listeners, if they look it up. There are three people wrote it. And fire engineering put it out there about OSHA needs to get rid of two in, two out. Two in, two out was developed for the OSHA respiratory standard hazmat a long time ago. Then we thought about structural stuff after that. I was intimately involved with that. But two in, two out was designed when the only person that had a radio was a company officer. So they talk about I have to be in voice. Well, I'm like, well, I have a $5,000 portable radio. I can't be in the bedroom here where you're over here or whatever. The delay in two in, two out, what it does to the growth of the fire, jeopardizes the lives of us, jeopardizes the lives of anybody trapped inside, so forth. You pull up at a strip mall 2 in the morning, there's two of you on your engine, and you decide to go in, shame on you. You pull up with three people on your engine outside my house right now at 2 in the morning, you got a driver, an officer, and a firefighter. And I don't, the building's not all boarded up. Now we can get into that too, but as my buddy John Salk would say, you better get your ass in there. I'm waiting for another engine until they get here before I can make entry as the fires grow. We tell the public all the time, the fire doubles inside for every minute. And yet we're waiting, instead of putting two guys on the line and they're flowing water, putting water, when we could catch a fire when it's room and contents instead of the whole second floor. So I think a lot of these bosses, and I've met some of them God, they're great guys and gals, but, or they have a close call and I've seen that tons of times. Okay. No more of this. And no, and I had a lieutenant. One of our guys got hurt, fell through a roof partially, and burned his legs a little bit. He got to be so much of a safety Nazi, if you will, that it became more dangerous to go to fires with him. And people said, "What? How could you be too safe? You could never be too safe." Well, you know what? If you're hesitating giving orders, if you're hesitating doing what you're supposed to do, if you have all the information, you're ready to make the decision and move forward, but you're doing it out of fear, a little bit of fear is good. Your gut feeling's even better. But we've got jammed up in the fire service more often by hesitating making good decisions than we have the other way, so I think a lot of that is the fear that some of the bosses have. They don't want to get someone hurt. Everything changes for you when you're the one that's running it, when you see how things going on, or you had a near miss or a line of duty or whatever. That's something that just, especially nowadays with all the social media whack-a-mole people that just beat you over the head for everything you do. If you can make sure your people are being aggressive in a backed up with training way, but not being reckless. Again, I'll just throw it out there. That's the word. Folks, forget the word aggressive to being too aggressive. The word you should be concerned with is reckless when your people are being reckless. No, there's nothing wrong with searching above the fire floor if your people are trained on how to do it, how to search without the protection hand line. I hope to God they are. There's nothing wrong. People pull up, we size the buildings wrong. I love the fire service, they're my favorite people. We misread buildings, we misread fire, we misread smoke. The buildings are what kill firefighters, not the smoke and fire. The fire and smoke are telling you everything. We stretch wrong size hose lines. We don't know how much water comes out of our nozzles. We don't know how much water we have in a tank and how much it can do for us. All these things. We know how to jump out of helicopters with carabiners and stuff, but we don't know about the basics. We don't know about what it takes to be a great firefighter and to get a line, get water on the fire as quick and efficiently as possible. Water to the see the fire as quickly as possible to change. We pull up and we call a building fully involved, but it's not fully involved. Okay, we pull up and go, we're going defensive. I'm like, okay, so we're not going in this building to protect. Oh, no, we're hitting it with the deck on our 2.5. Well, that's not defensive. That's a heavy caliber offensive attack that we're trying to knock it down to be able to make an interior fight. So let's get our terminology right. Danny, we lie to children every October. We go Fire Prevention Month. We go to schools and tell little kids, crawl low in the smoke, feel the door before you open if it's hot, because who's coming to get you? Don't open the door because the firefighter's coming to get you. Well, now that they're standing out in the lawn.
Right.
And but nobody could survive in that building. And then you go to social media, Danny, and you've seen them. How many times have you seen them? The pictures, the hallways gutted, the room to the left's gutted, the room to right. There's not even a speck of dust in there or whatever.
Right.
So we're telling people, close the door, which is a great concept, great program. Then give them the benefit of the doubt and get after it, whether it's an search or whatever. We're telling people to close the door and wait for us. Then you better be getting your ass in there to see if they're in there waiting on us. Not asking you to be stupid, not asking you to, crawl into rooms full of fire, burn your head, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Order you to the roof. They can order you to the second floor. They can't order you on or in when there's too much fire. But how can you say that standing outside? We told them to close the damn door, but now we're not going in there. So it goes back to, what are we going to tell people as chiefs? Again, the only way to eliminate some of those fears, or reduce them, I should say eliminate them, is for the bosses is to train your people. If you're not training your people, if you're not providing with the time and the effort to train, both physically, emotionally, cognitive up here, psychomotor with their hands, working with their tools, doing their stuff. Yeah, you should be nervous. You should be. When they pull up and they look all fancy with their gear in the rig, but they can't fight fires,
Right.
search a room, they don't know what they don't, you better be nervous. You better be scared out of your underwear if that's what you're doing. But if you're doing everything you can to train your people, have them, they're into the job, they're doing stuff because their families are the one that come and get in your face at a funeral. They're going to be dead in a box next to you, but their families are going to come and say, my wife, my husband, my partner, my significant other, my mom, my dad is not coming home because of what, Chief? And if you say, because someone's grandmother was in that back bedroom, we knew that, we were trying to get to her, and the fire was ahead of us, and sadly, this is what happened. No. They were, it was, they were, they, we didn't strike, we went in without a hose line at all. We're in there crawling around without even a hose line in there with us. Well, we don't get into building construction fire behavior because that's not exciting. We don't study this. We don't read smoke. Then you got some explaining to do, but do everything you can to get your people tooled up for what they need to do, and then I think you'll see some of that reduce. I don't think you should not fear or not be a little nervous at all because you lose your edge.
Absolutely.
But
Absolutely.
people are counting on us. I don't know how else to say it. People go to bed every night thinking about us, man. They look at fire engines, they go, that's why the kids wave at you. That's why people go, oh, there's our heroes. Well, let's live up to what we think we are to the public. I didn't mean to be stupid. I didn't mean to be like crazy nut job, with how you do things, but I'm saying you better lead with a coordinated aggressiveness. You better pull up and be ready to go. You better be hitting it. You better be going after people, what you have to do right now, and have the tools and equipment from your bosses and the training to back it up. Or yeah, if you're a boss, you better be nervous. Yeah.
And sadly, we have organizations with chief officers that continuously every day roll that dice, knowing that their staff is not equipped with the proper training and they're living off hope, hoping and prayer.
Danny, what's the first part of the budget that gets cut? Training.
Training, which
First
is
time in
crazy.
4 years. The most important part of the budget you should have. I remember years ago, this guy wanted to show me his new command car. I got this new command vehicle. They had like nine bays, big firehouse. And we walked all the way, we're walking towards it. I could see it's coming up, Danny, because there was like spotlights and floodlights and revolving lights around. It was like, movie premiere, all this stuff. I got down there. He opens up the door and he goes, there it is. This is years ago. He goes, $16,000. 16, now it's like 60,000. $16,000. Turnkey, turnkey. He goes, look at this. He goes, I got my, it's this big, beautiful cabinetry, all this stuff in the back of this battalion buggy. He goes, look at, he goes, I got my, he goes, I, he goes, I got my radios. I have my sticky board, meaning his magnetic board. He goes, I got a fax machine because I never know I have to order Chinese food from a fire. And I got my LED ear lights. I could go from white to clear to purple to bring back to white again. 16th, and I'm like, wow, how much money did you spend on training this year? He goes, oh, hell, they cut that. And I'm like, so you chose to what would be like 50, 60 grand now, that instead of train your people. But the first thing gets cut, you said it, is training. The most important thing, the thing that keeps us alive. Staffing, good apparatus and tools, and training. Keep your people alive. And we cut staffing. We don't, a lot of departments now are going through, they're riding on crappy ass broken down rigs because they haven't kept up with it. They want to blame the 3 and 4 year wait. Well, how about a good maintenance program too? How about having, spending money on that? I mean, anyway, yeah, it's, yeah, absolutely.
I love it.
What else you got? What else?
Kind of going along the same topic. Actually, no, before I ask that question, there's one more chief type question I want to ask you. When you were fire chief, what were your non-negotiables?
My non-negotiables were, and we used to say this in every single interview for firefighter before you ever got hired. I used to sit there, the panel would ask all the questions, and then I would look at the candidate and I say, I would explain what our core values meant of pride, honor, integrity, what it meant it took to be a Louisville firefighter. You pick on Louisville, and I would tell them that if you harass someone or you lie or steal, I'll fire you. I have a zero tolerance policy for harassment. The bullies and the thugs in a firehouse. And if you're dishonest, if you lie or steal, you're done. You can come to me with a dependency problem, a drug problem that got away from you, a medication problem, a drink or whatever. You smash a rig up, whatever. If you come in and own up to it, go, I don't know what the hell. Yeah, chief, I was turning the corner too quick. It's my bad. Give me a day, whatever. I will fight to the death for your career. I will fight to the death. As you say, non-negotiable. You lie or you steal, you're done. I tell people all the time, you really think you could trust a thief to stay with you in a burning building, when things go sideways? And I have a zero tolerance policy for the harassers. I tell people all the time, I grew up in the South Side of Chicago. If you look at my high school yearbook picture, it looked like the League of Nations. If we didn't like you, it wasn't because your race, religion, your gender, your sexual orientation, it's because you're an asshole. Some of these things that go on in firehouses with the so-called brothers, not necessarily the sisters, because there's some issues there too, but really, how do you call yourself part of the brotherhood? And there's a her in my brotherhood. How do you call yourself part of the brotherhood when you allow people to do that? I said this before, I met a lot of brave people in my life, some heroes that are incredible. But as brave as firefighters are, they truly are. They'll crawl into burning buildings the whole time, hoping it don't fall on top of or underneath them. They'll go out on the highway and play in traffic at night. But as brave as they are, and they truly are, they won't stand up to someone in the firehouse that's doing something wrong to jeopardize their shift, their reputation, whatever. And if you allow the harassment to go on your fire, not to tease, look, we all tease, we all have fun, we all have that stuff. We know, what I'm talking about. You allow that to happen. You allow people who are dishonest to work for you. I don't want you in my house. I don't want you around my kids. I don't want you around my firefighters. So my non-negotiables was that. If you're dishonest, you're gone. I will not sleep. If you're harassing somebody, harassing, not teasing. You know what I'm saying? There's fun. You can give me a hard time all you want. Oh, look how last go, who, you know, that, all that stuff that actually allows a lot of people to fit into the firehouse. But there's a line you don't cross. You cross that line, there's no coming back. In my world, there's no, chief, I'm sorry. Well, I appreciate that, but you're done here. You're done here. So I think once you compromise your integrity, nothing else matters. There's nothing. I don't care. Some non-negotiable. Some people is always have your face piece on, which I believe in. Always have your tools. Get dressed. Be ready. All that stuff. I agree with that. If you're a person of integrity. If your person has character, if your person believes in what's right, if you have your arms wrapped around your core values, something you believe in, then everything else seems to fall into place. How hard you train, how you treat people on the street, how you treat people in a firehouse, how you do your job, all that falls into place if you got good, strong core values in your department, in your life. Yeah, those my non-negotiables are if you, and they know it. I used to make them acknowledge it. I used to say, acknowledge this right now. If you lie or steal, you'll be turning it. And we would make a note. We've dated and time it, so there's no surprises later. I didn't know I could. No. You know what? If you're a thief, I don't want you around here. If you're dishonest, I don't want you around here. I'm sorry. Someone needs to come to me and really try to justify having a thief on their department.
Agreed. Okay. With that being said, Chief Rhodes at the last FDIC, he had a really good speech when it comes to, the mental health effects of the fire service. So one thing I've seen is really good firefighters mess up, whether it's alcohol, substance abuse, whatever the case may be. A majority of that occurs because of what they see, what they go through, the lack of caring about the individual, hire overs, mandos, all that good stuff. And we will fire them just like that instead of what's going on. And I truly believe that whenever you have a fire department that allows HR to have a little bit more pull within the fire department, it's HR sees it. Oh, he failed his drug test or popped on a P test, whatever. He's gone without asking what's going on with that individual. It's like we are quick to fire them instead of figuring out, because humans make mistakes, and I feel like the world has kind of forgotten that we are not perfect. And instead of asking what's going on, they'll just get rid of you.
Well, and I worked for a boss, Chief David Rhodes, and our partner, Chief Bobby Halt, before him. They were in a process of transitioning. Bobby was handing the reins over to David. David Rhodes is phenomenal. He's one of us. I'm proud that I work for a magazine and a conference, FDIC, that I've been with since 95, that not only promotes cancer awareness and prevention, they promote mental health awareness. In the old days, Danny, you were called a coward or a weakling. Now we're training brand new probies. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to ask for help because it's not normal to see what a firefighter sees. It's not normal to see dead babies and burnt up bodies and chopped up arms, have people stand over you screaming, save my mom, my dad, whatever, and hold your composure. It's not normal to have that in your life. Now, there when it comes to mental health awareness, there are doctors that still haven't figured this stuff out yet. What scares me is there's firefighters with PowerPoint presentations that are out there teaching classes on it that have no background except what they went through a class themselves. It's one thing to come back to your department and do a little presentation for your people, what you learn. It's another thing to be out there getting paid to do lectures on it when there's doctors that haven't figured this stuff out. But that being said, we all know that a lot of the dependency problems, if you've never been addicted, I used to say it above, I've never smoked in my life. All the years I played sports, I never dipped, I never had tobacco, I've never held a cigarette in my hand. But I know what it was like for my mom to try and quit smoking, especially after my brother died. If you've never been addicted to anything, you have no idea what people are talking about. Why don't you just quit? Oh, really? It's that easy. Well, a lot of the drug and alcohol abuse in the world, but let alone let's just talk to fire service, some of it is just someone that's out there hanging with the wrong people all the time and all that stuff. Some of it is, it was back pain medicine they have after surgery or stuff like that. But some of the other stuff is it was a coping. It was a way to cope with the stresses of life. And it's not always the firehouse. We tend to blame the fire department for a lot of things. And when you look at the back matter and why somebody, God, I hate it, someone that took their life or attempted to or whatever, there was a lot of things going on in their life that attribute to that. And then, but there are times where something at the firehouse, this happened and that pushed you over. This was the tipping point, not the whole thing, but this was what tipped you over. So in the absence of a good EAP, in the absence of good bosses that are paying attention to people, and that's everything from people can be fit, not fit for duty, due to mental, everybody thinks it's a physical thing. If you're not paying attention to people, if you're not listening to her, who's going through, marital problems, financial problems, kid ran away, someone on drugs, something like this, whatever. Or if you haven't noticed someone's behavior, I had a guy once that, was an athlete. You'd see pictures of all of the firehouse, and he walked by me years later. He walked by me, and he looked like a poster child for before and after with meth. And I asked his officer, I said, "Hey, what's going on with him?" He goes, "Oh, you noticed that, huh?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, we've been dealing with that for about a year." I go, "Wait, what do you mean you've been dealing with it?" Because this whole brother sister thing, we want to help each other. Well, sometimes help each other is steering them to the professionals. There are some HR places. I would say this in defense of the HR people I usually deal with. Most of them are over the top nowadays with helping people. There's a lot of them that aren't just pulling the trigger. And people think they are, but what people in the firehouse don't know is we've been working with Rick for a long time on this. Because of its confidentiality, because we don't talk about or release information regarding people's medical and psych history and that, all of a sudden, what? They got rid of Danny because of the dad's bullshit. He just, wait. And you wish you could say, guys, we've been working on this for 2 years and it's not going to, he's made some conscious decisions to not better him. So we've spent thousands of dollars in counseling and stuff to fix him. It's not, sometimes it just doesn't work. Sometimes you got to go, look, we have to make a decision here. We've done everything we can to put you in programs, to get you counseling, to get you stuff you need to be it to fix this. It's not working. And we tend to, at the kitchen table, jump up and bang our fists when we don't know the whole story. And I know personally, as a fire chief, I sat there going, I've taken some beating sometimes by people, and I'm inside, I'm going, if you only knew, if you only knew what was really going on, you'd go, oh man, that kind of thing. So I think the majority of departments out there have good employee assistance programs. I always ask people this in class, Danny. I say, so who has an EAP? They all raise their hands nowadays. Good. If you need the phone number for your buddy, where do you find it? It's on a Baltimore station. It's in the captain's office. It's on the computer. I go, good. Why is it not on your cell phone? You got the phone number for the takeout menu for the pizza place or whatever. Here's some more data for you. All right. This is fact. The majority of the time you're going to need the EAP, you're not going to be on duty at the firehouse. For you or but you're gonna be off duty. Someone's gonna call you from home, whatever. And the time to run a call up to the firehouse when they're on a call or whatever, instead of saying, hang on, Danny, please don't, man, let me just do a three-way. Let me just call. Let's get this going. Please don't do this, brother. Please. Well, hang on. Let me call. I'll call you right back. I gotta call, get the phone number, that kind of thing. And I'm not dissing anybody. I'm just saying, put EAP and put that phone number in your phone. God, I hope you never have to do it. But without an aggressive, without people going to Firefighter Behavioral Health Alliance, that group, ffbha.org. Without them looking into that, well, they're in my briefcase. They've got a little bifold you can put in your wallet. They have mental health indicators, recommended course of actions, confidential phone numbers. Academies now, not all of them, but a majority of them are spending time saying, not only can you screw up your career with social media, we're going to teach you how to keep your career. We're also going to tell you that it's okay to not be okay, So a lot of HR people, I have, there are some that are not that good.
Right.
The majority of them are,
Absolutely.
the majority that I deal with are actually pretty phenomenal. But what firefighters don't understand is there's a lot of stuff going on behind
That
the
they
scenes,
can't disclose, which I understand 100%.
but I think we've turned a corner actually a while ago when you have people like Chief David Rhodes and organizations going, no, when you go to FDIC and you see Mike Ciampa walk out and talk about the cancer he's fighting, when you see people walk out and say, that when I was in sixth grade, I thought about sixth grade, who knows what your emotions were, but when you don't sit down and talk to people and you don't use a system and you don't have a good chaplain's program with people, you don't have a mechanism where people go talk to someone. When company officers are hiding in their office, they're not paying attention to people. When you allow people to build firehouses with condominiums, which go against everything with the mental health awareness. Well, what they tell you in the conferences, you have to keep an eye on your people. That's like the third bad baby call they've had that month. Hey guys, keep an eye. Hey, Lieutenant, come here. Keep an eye on Danny, man. He's got a kid, all that stuff. Well, where's he at? He's up in his room all day. We haven't seen him since we got back to the call. That's the worst thing you can do. But good bosses, good leaders. If you're a good parent, you watch your kids. If you're a good company officer, you're watching. You're calling in the office, closing the door, say, how you doing, Danny? You doing okay? I'm not meddling, but if you need to talk, come see me.
All right.
I'm gonna tell you, dude, I've been there. It's not normal to see the stuff we see. We have to have an outlet. And when we don't have an outlet, a sanctioned outlet, and people know that they're protected. And I'll tell you want to, here's, I'll throw another non-negotiable. Harass someone that's having a mental, give someone, call someone. That goes back to the harassment and bullying thing. That's one of the many things. Sex harassment, age discrimination, all those different things that fall under the harassment thing. It's not just one. You want to do that? you're going to be the one looking for a job, not them. You know, I think we need to stay and even become more proactive when it comes to mental health issues, which includes addiction issues and everything else with that. So.
Definitely. It definitely, and that, to me, that's part of the whole brotherhood, you know, like, because everyone's wired different. We are all going to view a terrible incident, terrible call a different way. But it's the guys that look at you and it's like, you know, there's that stigma. Well, if I show emotion, I'm weak and I don't want to look weak among my peers. You know, like, it's okay to cry. You know, like, I'll always admit that we had a terrible call with a pediatric baby. We got back to the station. I went out back and I cried because it's not delightful to see that. You know what I mean? Like, that's someone that just lost their child. We pulled up and we didn't even have to go inside. The lady's outside waiting for us, holding her lifeless baby in her hand. And we did CPR on the front bumper of the truck. Like, that's not normal. And then you'll have guys that'll be like, oh, well, they're weak. Like, I'm not gonna cry in front of people. Well, kudos to you.
Hey, you know what, Danny? There are people out there that I'm one of the fortunate ones, as I say it, that, you know, I'm able to control that. Little kids bother me, but it's usually back in the ambulance or afterwards, a little meltdown. But some of the bravest people I know have had their moments, you know, and I'll use this one. He knows I do this. I adore this guy. Chief Butch Cobb retired as an ops chief in Jersey City, a very busy department. Butchie was a soldier in Vietnam, and he has medals that go from his chest down to his toes. You'd never know it. He responded mutual aid on 9/11 through the tunnel. A lot of people remember a Jersey City dispatcher got killed that day. Butch was there for the first collapse, saw New York City firefighters get killed. He saw him get killed the second collapse, and it sent him back to Vietnam. So we're at John Salka's, one of his sons, James, he's a major in the Marines, at his wedding. And Poughkeepsie, and there's a bunch of us sitting around, Jay Jonas, Mickey Conboy, Chris DeLizio, you know, and Butchie. And Butchie leans over, he goes, "Hey, Ricky," he goes, "you know, I'm back in counseling." We actually had Butch on one of our podcasts talk about this very thing. And I said, he says, "You know, I'm back in counseling." I said, "Oh, that's good, Butch." He goes, "Yeah, because I knew why." He goes, "You know, the best thing about going to counseling again?" I go, You get to talk to someone." He goes, No. He goes, "I can't tell how many young firefighters have come up to me going, you know, I told my spouse, if it's okay for Butch, one of the bravest dudes I know, to go talk to someone, it must be okay for me." And leading by example when it comes to this stuff, Danny, is some of the best ways to have an impact, make a difference. Lead by example, show your people, you know. I mean, here's a guy who's one of the bravest dudes I've ever met going, you know, and he talks openly about it. You know, because you're right, it's not normal to see what we see. And we need more role models out there. Like just like Mike Ciampa walked out on the stage and said, holding that mask, going, "Don't do what happened to me," you know, or go work towards detecting this stuff early. All right. Same thing comes when it's all the other, so with mental health awareness. You know what? Be an advocate. Nobody's weak. I'm sorry. You call someone a weakling or coward, you're the coward. You're a bully, and you have no place in my firehouse. Well, you know, these kids nowadays, stop blaming the kids nowadays. You know what, dude? They said the same thing about you 35 years ago. 100 years ago, firefighters in the kitchen go, "Look at these kids now. They don't know nothing about those horses or the steam fire engines." You know, I'm just, you know, stop that. Nobody was perfect when they walked in there. Nobody was that, you know, in fact, you're probably covered for yourself by saying it doesn't bother you. You're probably one of the ones, that's how you're covering that it does bother you. If you're a good boss, if you're any kind of a parent, then you take care of your people. And anybody can have your back, Danny, at a fire. I got your brother, I got your sister at a fire. How about the rest of the time? How about the majority of the time? You know, how about back at a fire, you know, at home, whatever? How about taking care of each other? Be that true brother or sister that takes care of each other away from the fire ground too. You know, instead of just running your mouth or doing lip service, you know. So yeah, it's not normal. Yeah, absolutely.
Recruitment and retention. In your opinion, Chief, what do you see the fire service is doing good on, but what are some things that we can improve on when it comes to, because we all know we're not getting the applicants in numbers like we used to. So what's your take on what we can do to improve that?
I think a lot of what's going on, there's this sudden expansion of fire departments in certain areas of the United States. In tech, I'll just pick on Texas. They're building firehouses here like crazy. And there's a flip going on too, where a lot of the old people I hired a long time ago are retiring. So there's a lot of signing bonuses. If we hire you, we'll give you $10,000 and all that. Regarding recruitment retention, we have to separate the volunteers from the career. We don't recruit the right way. Retention is a whole different thing with benefits, pay, benefits, apparatus, everything else. But if you encompass the whole fire service, volunteer career, more people leave a job because of bad leadership than they do the pay.
Facts.
A lot of people leave because I've seen it tons and tons of times where they leave because of bad leadership instead of pay. Now, look, pay, benefits and that and all that stuff is a big deal. I understand that. You got to pay your bills and everything else. But we don't recruit. I've said for years, we don't recruit right. We go to old people's social media, which is Facebook. We put it out there. We throw stuff on social media. We put a blinking sign outside. We put it on the website. And I'll ask people, I'll say, well, so how many of your churches, do you have a recruitment or retention committee? No. Well, let's talk about that. Secondly, how many churches have you been to? If you want to recruit good people to be firefighters in your city, your department, your district, whatever, are you hitting the churches where you'll find good people? Are you hitting some of the athletic teams, male and female, people who are already physically fit for this stuff? Are you going to the academies, EMT, paramedic schools, fire academies? Are you out there? Are you aggressively out there, not just going to spring break where people are, drinking all over the place, stuff like that? Are we actually, and how are you writing it? How are you? I love seeing the post. In fact, if you follow me on social media, you'll see on some of my Facebook stuff and Twitter and that and Instagram, I have a lot of people say, "Hey, Chief, would you do me a favor? Would you post this for our hiring notice?" And so a lot of times I'm just doing it as a favor to people to post their stuff. But so when you see something that says, and I saw Sacramento did this. This was great. Sacramento, California. Very first bullet point, aggressive fire department. We talked about that. Aggressive fire department, 4896 shift, USAR team, specialty teams, heavy rescues, training, blah, 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 blah. When you start, now it's like, 2472s, 4896s, we do this, we do that, we train. Well, the day of just saying, hey, Beeperville's testing. Let's jump in the car, Danny Saturday, go take their written exam is done. The day of thousands of people showing certain departments to test is done. We've got to be out there beating the drum, but not just on social media, not just on a website. If you want to see more people, in the absence of a good hiring and background process, you'll hire the wrong people to hire problems. So what are you doing to hire people? What about your process? Is your process, again, fair, objective, attainable by the masses? I didn't say reduce anything. In fact, the people out there I've dealt with, like my friends and women in the fire service, you want to get some of my best friends are female chiefs of firefighters. You want to get them pissed off? Talk about reducing standards. They will get in your face about, now some places you can't have the Dallas Cowboys write your physical ability test for you. Well, maybe right now you can't. I'm sorry. It's a Cowboys joke, but no, you can't. It's got to be fair, objective, attainable by all. But if your processes aren't there, if you're not, we just do a very dispatchers. We do the wrong thing recruiting dispatchers for police and fire. We go hire young men and women that want to be cops and firefighters. And guess what? They go become cops and firefighters. Instead of sometimes you have to find someone who already started a family that doesn't want to go work at, no disrespect, at Kohl's or McDonald's. They want a job where they're making a difference in people's lives. How we're marketing, how we're out there doing it is huge. You're never going to get away from now, well, I'm going to come here for 3 years, but they're paying more money. That's life now. People got to get over that whole point. Every time I hire them, they leave, they go that, well, you know what? Look, your tax base doesn't support you paying more than they do over there. So how else can we attract people? I'm a big one on, if you came to Louisville, you could be one of 56 divers on the dive team. You could be SCBA tech. You could be an arson investigation, a cause and origin investigator. We'll say arson is we say the police academy issue a pistol, we arrest people. You could be an FTO on the ambulance. You could be on the pipes and drums band. You could be part of the honor guard. There's all these things you could do, giving people a chance to kind of flourish give a chance, to do things instead of just one thing. That also helps. But you got to sit down and look at your process. What are you doing to attract people, and how? I think has a lot to do with it. We're at a point though in the fire service where, yeah, there's a ton of jobs and not enough candidates out there. We're all competing for the same people. So how you present it, where you go, what you do has a lot to do with it. How open are you to hiring people from out of state? How does your state, like the Texas Commission of Fire Protection, you go to their website, I think it's in the upper left-hand corner, out-of-state firefighters. You click and it tells you all you have to do, whether you're pro board, ISTAT, IFSCAT, or not, what you have to submit, how you submit to be evaluated to see if you can be a firefighter or you already have it in this state to see if what you already have is transferable or what you have to do to test for it. So is your commission, is your certifying entity, whether it's the fire marshal's office, whoever in your state, if they're proactive enough to realize that we're not just going to be able to hire people from the state of Florida anymore. We have to reach out beyond the borders, that kind of thing. I'll give you an example. We were hiring firefighter paramedics for the longest time. I wanted to get rid of the written exam. We were killing off good candidates because the written exam. And I'm like, wait a minute. They're a certified paramedic, which means to me they've already proven their cognitive abilities to pass the written exam. So Louisville does a process a little bit different. They do if they're doing a certified exam. You come in with your packet, you have to have it all filled out. No leaving anything blank. Once you're ready, you go to one of three things. You either go to the training field where you do the physical ability, you sit in the classroom, you have an hour and you get a writing assignment. You're graded not on necessarily grade, but you're graded on following directions and stuff like that. And another one is a rapid panel assessment. Seven people sitting there, one person asks a question. If it's a 10-minute interview, you get asked three questions you're graded on. Now, if you pass all that, then they've already done the back, they're gonna do the background check on you. Some other things, and then they're going to come back and do like another, they're going to do a chief's interview, a secondary with that kind of stuff, someplace in two, whatever, and then a psych test, a drug test, and all that. But they are very successful at how they do that because they looked at what was realistic and what's not with their hiring process. Like I said, some people kill off good candidates. They either make it too difficult or they make it one way where it's just a written exam or so, and then they wonder why they're not hiring people, but the process has to be looked at. But how you recruit, here's the challenge. A lot of us don't have people working within the fire department that's out there recruiting people. The HR people, the one, and they're good. The HR people are good. They're the ones, that are posted everything, but we know where to go. We know what to do. Most HR people provide you with everything you need to go out and recruit people. But again, go to your sports teams in high school. Do you have a juniors program? Do you have a junior? Have a kid, people, do you have a juniors program in school? Do you have something in school, in high school, where kids are already trained to be firefighters? There are programs out there. When you turn 18, you're already an EMT and you sit down, you take your state exam for firefighter. And they're already drawing people into the fold. They're already sucking them into what we're doing by that. But I've asked people before, so how many churches do you go to and ask if you can speak to the congregation or whatever, or set up something? Well, we don't do that. Well, there you go. How many junior colleges, community colleges, universities, how many places have you been to talk to? No. How many people have been, how many career days do you do? How many different stuff, so forth, And the day of everybody wants to be a firefighter, it's a cool thing to do. Is not as popular as it used to be, even though it is the coolest thing to do. We're very partial to it. So yeah, I think we got to figure that stuff out. And secondly, that's the recruit part. The retention part is if we're not providing people the training, the abilities to go to class, the certifications, the stuff they need to progress, challenging them, allowing them to succeed, then they're going to leave to go to places where they're going to. If they're working, if you allow bad bosses to rule the roost, then they're going to leave your place to go to work for somewhere else. So we could do a whole show just on recruitment and retention. I get to see in my travels what works and what doesn't work. So, yeah.
With that being said, the last question for you, which it's gonna be, I want to hear your take on it. So I always like to ask the guests, where would they like to see themselves? Because a lot of times a lot of my guests aren't fire chiefs and things like that. And some of them, when they answer, they would like to work their way up to fire chief. But since you have already been that, What's next for you? You said you're in your 45th year and you love it. You still love it. You don't want to give it up. So what's next?
Golly, I don't know. Right now, I travel, I teach, I consult, I do labor management stuff, I follow up on line of duty debts. I do a lot of fixing of things, a lot of mediation, teach a lot of classes, a lot of programs, a lot of seminars, a lot with my buddy John Salker from the FDNY. I love volunteering. I don't know. Once in a while, someone will ask me if I would like to be their fire chief, and I'll say that's not out of the question either. I'm not moving away from my granddaughter. She's four. I'm not moving away from, but that being said, I really right now God, I'm on that glider. I'm having fun. I'm working my tail off. I'm doing a lot of stuff, but I'm nowhere close to retiring from what we're doing. So I don't know what holds for Rick. It could be fire chiefing it again real soon, or just continue doing what I'm doing and volunteering and doing all that stuff and staying active and having at it. So.
So you mentioned one thing, and I know it's probably perking up some other individuals' ears that I talk to and know of. So, fire chief, becoming another fire chief at another organization, that's not out the question for you.
Well, no, I mean it's never out of the question.
Okay.
When I help recruit, chiefs. I do a lot of training of chiefs, mentoring of chiefs, getting them ready for that position. I help a lot of places find interim chiefs or fire chief candidates and so on and so forth. And doing that, and it's just to answer your question, it's not a brain. I make fun of myself all the time. I egos eat brains, and I'm definitely not one of those people. But in doing so, you get a lot of guys that say, "Hey, would you be interested in being our fire chief? Would you imagine?" And I'm like, I'm honored, I'm flattered, but I'm not going to move, away from my. I'm not. I did it once. I moved away from my kids. I'll never do it again. My wife was miserable, absolutely miserable, being away from our little granddaughter, and from our kids. I'll never do that again. I moved to Texas, which I love this. We've been here 25 years. I moved here to be near my son. Now they're all grown up right now and everything else, but it would have to depend. It would depend, and so that's always out there. It's always out
Right,
there.
right.
I've had people call, from other states and go, "What would it take? Or would you be interested?" And I'm honored. I always tell them I'm absolutely honored and flattered that you even thought of me, because there's so many great people out there that so many future and current great candidates to be fire chief. So it all depends,
I got you. But I mean,
so.
but Chief, you got to admit that's a hell of a feeling because you have established yourself. Because I took a class with Chief Scott Thompson in Pittsburgh, and he mentions how he came into the organization when you were fire chief, and how you set the example is the way Chief Scott Thompson is now. But that's got to be an awesome feeling, knowing the way you lead yourself, how you expect the men and women of your organization to act and, respond to things. Like it's an awesome feeling for yourself because
Well,
you're sought after.
there's always Scott is. I love Scott. Scott's been a good friend. He was my train chief for 10 years. He's doing incredible things in the colony, Texas. He's one of our co-hosts on our Hump Day Hangout, the third Wednesday of every month with Fire Engineering. Scott, he's just the author of the best-selling book, The Functional Fire Company. Scott is just, he taught it me for me at hand, our hands-on FDIC. Scott's an incredible boss, fire ground leader, and all that. And he just, he's overall just a great boss, great leader. There are some people, you've seen it before. If you're any kind of a leader and haven't pissed people off, you haven't done your job. There's a couple people that aren't probably happy with me out there because we had to let them go, or they fire themselves. As a consultant, sometimes I go in and sometimes I have to help HR make a tough decision about people. And then, so if like I said before, if you want to make everybody happy, go sell ice cream. Sometimes you have to make, I do a class called Great Leaders Make Difficult Decisions. And that's what it is. I love the fire service more than life itself. My family comes first. I love firefighters. I absolutely adore firefighters. But once in a while, you need to be the boss. Once in a while, you have to be the leader. Once in a while, you have to make those hard decisions. And sometimes that's coaching, counseling, having that hard conversation. But I am honored. I'm absolutely, like I said, I don't know what to say. I'm absolutely honored when people say, It's funny because out of all the podcasts I've done, no one's ever asked me that about where do you see yourself going? I don't know how else to say. I'm always honored. My wife will see an email come through, go, "Hey, so and so from Ohio is asking if you'd be interested in interviewing for fire chief." And I'm like, "Oh man, that's a great place, but man, they'd be moving away." And it would have everything. The everything would have to line up. I'm not saying it's out of the question. I'm very active. I'm not sitting on my couch. Watching Western movies and stuff like that. I'm always doing stuff. But we'll see. We'll see what happens one day. We're still doing it. So.
And one last question, because you cued it to me. So we all know in order to get good at this job, there are so many conferences and meetings and seminars, and you are a busy man. You travel all over the country, but your priority, which you definitely have it because you said that you want to be close to your kids. How important is it for firefighters to find that balance, work, life, and making sure they don't let, which we love the fire service, individuals that listen to podcasts, go to these, we love it. But how do we not lose focus on what's truly important? And how did you do that?
Well, there's actually a chapter in my Pride and Ownership book. I'm not doing it to plug it, just it's called Our Two Families. The first family to want a home, the second family to want at work. And when you confuse the second family for the first family, you get up with an ex who lives in Texas with your son. I tell people, look, I want you to love the job. Oh my God, I want you to love being a firefighter. I want you. I love hanging with people who love the job. I have no patience with people who don't love being a firefighter. I have no patience with people who treat it just as a job, just as a paycheck. I have no patience for them. I love being around people who love the job, but I want you to love your family first. Now, whether that's your mom or dad, uncle or aunt, grandma, grandpa, wife, husband, partner, whatever it is, your kids, if you're not striking that balance, I remember John Salka years ago, we're up on a big stage for about 3,000 people at FDIC, and somebody asked all three of us, me, Bobby Hall, and John Salka, if you could do it again, what would you do differently? And John says, I'd spend more time with my family. And I'm like, he loves his family. And what some people wait till late in life to start spending time with family. I think the best firefighters out there make it work because in order to be good out there for those people, you have to be good with family. People who have values, people that have family values, people who could treat people both in and out of the firehouse like family do well. I've said this for a long time, Danny. The greatest leaders I've ever studied or worked with or worked alongside or been able to meet all have one thing in common. They value family. They know where to draw. You love the job. Golly, you love the job. But man, your family. I made a decision not too long ago recently that we changed our whole life up because my wife was miserable being away from our granddaughter. And every day I'd leave and I'd be going to the firehouse looking at her and going, God, what did I do to my family? And I'm like, sorry, you can be mad at me all you want, but I'm fixing this right now. Don't put yourself in that position. As tired as I would be coming home from work, I always played with my kids. You only get one chance. You only get one chance for them to pay attention to story time. You only get one chance for a lot of this stuff. Don't waste the opportunities. Life is short. Everything in life is temporary. You don't know what's going to happen. Strike a good balance. Make an effort to get to your kids' activities. I got to sound so dramatic. Call your mom, call your dad. I tell people all the time, if you have parents that are older, call them and ask them to call you back. Then don't answer the phone. Let them leave a message on your phone. Then record it and keep it on your computer. I've got my dad's voice. My mom and dad are gone. I can play my dad, hear his voice anytime I want my mom. I can do that. It's about striking that balance. Defending your family at home, defending family at the firehouse. When you're home. When you're at the firehouse, you're at the firehouse. But those that don't, though, and I've seen good people ruin their marriages because they love the firehouse too much. And that's coming from the guy who wrote a book called Pride and Ownership, Love for the Job. They love the job too much that people at home are sacking, but people at home are feeling neglected. People at home are going, he'd rather be at that firehouse than with me, that kind of stuff. So it's about striking that balance. You need to strike that balance. If you're going to tilt it one way more than the other, then tilt it towards your family life. There you go. But You've got to you be a big believer. I everything I do now, and I've done for years, all points back to the most important people in my life, and that's the people are going to be for me long after the firehouse is gone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Chief, I truly appreciate you coming on, spending time, talking shop, spreading the gospel about the fire service. Thank you for what you do. And I sincerely appreciate you coming on, spending time out of your day to do this.
Well, yeah, I'm telling you, thanks for having me, Danny. I was excited this morning. It's one of those things where I keep looking at the clock going, anytime now, anytime now. It's gonna be anytime now. And I was excited to come on with you. Like I said, I love talking shop, and thank you for what you do. We need more people like you making a difference out there. And you're making a difference at what you're doing with your guests and everything else. Spread the word, spread the
Sir.
gospel, if you will. And I can't thank you enough for what you do, brother. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir, Chief. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.